Okay, I'll call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 3:53 p.m. on Friday, May 18th, 2024. And present today, we've got Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Kronk, Representative Ortiz, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. Just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. And the plan is to take up next, first we've got House Bill 400, that's the Correspondence Study Programs and Allotments. We'll take public testimony and review the fiscal note and set an amendment deadline. Then we'll hear an introductory hearing on Senate Bill 205, that's the HFC Authority to Acquire a Building. We'll take public testimony on that. We'll review the fiscal note, set an amendment deadline. I suspect if it's the will of the committee, that could potentially be one. If folks wanted to move that, we could always do that. But if folks don't, we won't. If folks need more time on that. And then Senate Bill 170, that's extend senior benefits, repeal longevity bonus, take public testimony on that, and then set an amendment deadline. Then we'll go to SB 151, that's Missing Murdered Indigenous People Report. We'll hear from the sponsor, take public testimony, review fiscal note, set an amendment deadline. And we heard this bill, the House companion to that was sponsored by Representative McCormick. We heard that on April 30th. And then after that, we'll take SB 259, it's compensation for certain state employees, introduction of the bill. We'll take public testimony and review the fiscal note and set an amendment deadline. So that was a little bit of a mouthful there. Afternoon portion of the agenda includes, so that was the first part of our meeting. So the afternoon meeting that we had scheduled was SB 189, that's extending the Alaska Commission on Aging, Senate Bill 183, Workers' Compensation Benefits Guarantee Fund, and I think that'll round us out. So it looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bills that would love to try to get through today. Would also like to note that we also have with us Representative Tomaszewski, we have Representative Colomb, and so with that, I would like to first invite up to the table Representative Ruffridge as well as his staff, Mr. Bud Sexton. If you could come up and put yourselves on the record and introduce to us HB 400, Correspondence Study Programs, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. For the record, my name is Justin Ruffridge. I am the representative for District 7, Kenai and Soldotna. Thank you, Finance Committee members, for taking up HB 400 today. As I'm sure you all are aware of the recent court decision regarding the allotment program for correspondence studies in the state, striking down the sections of statute dealing with allotments and individualized learning plans. HB 400 seeks to establish uncodified law with a sunset date of essentially a board-regulated version of individualized learning plans and constitutional allotment programs. It does have a sunset date of the end of June 2025, and simply states that individualized learning plans should exist, be regulated by the Board of Education, and allotments should exist and be regulated in accordance with the provisions of the Constitution dealing with educational spending and be regulated by the Board, and at the very end, adding in some audit provisions to ensure that that is accomplished. And that is HB 400 in a nutshell.
Great, thank you very much. We'll go to public testimony as well as review of the fiscal note. I believe it's just one fiscal note. Actually, let's just jump right over to that. With the Department of Education online, we have Ms. Davy Riddle. Ms. Riddle, if you could put yourself on the record.
Hi, thank you. My name is Deborah Riddle, and I am the Division Operations Manager for the Division of Innovation Education Excellence at the Department of Education Early Development. I'm going to provide some information about fiscal note for the component 2796. There's one item on this fiscal note, and that is $6,000 for the update and development of regulations to support this bill.
Okay, thank you very much. So with that, I'll jump right into public testimony, and then we'll go to questions. So first up, I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony for HB 400. That's Correspondence Study Programs and Allotments. And is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? I don't see anyone. So online we have, it looks like, I think 12 people who would like to testify. And first we'll start with Mr. Matthew Forrester. If folks could maybe try to keep it to about 2 minutes, but I'll give some flexibility on that. And so, Mr. Forrester, if you can put yourself on the record, looks like you're calling from Anchorage. Just if you can state your name and your affiliation. Mr. Forrester, are you there? Looks like Mr. Forrester called in at 1:47 p.m., so he's been waiting. So we'll come back to him. Ms. Erica Jones, are you there, also calling from Anchorage?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, if you could put yourself on the record.
How do I do that, to say my name?
Yes, if you could just state your name and if you are with a organization, which organization you're with, and if you have a position with them, director or anything like that, just if you could let us know. That's all.
Okay. So my name is Erica Jones. I am a homeschooling parent with the Ideal Homeschool Program, along with a special needs teacher with the Ideal Homeschool Program.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, proceed with your testimony.
My name is Erica Jones. I'm a homeschooling parent of a highly gifted second grader and a special needs teacher. I am in favor of House Bill 400, as this bill gives the state and the Department of Education the time to carefully and methodically go over the legal concerns. We should not be quickly addressing these concerns, as that will lead to unintended and unforeseen consequences. Changes to education need to be well thought out and deliberate. With the Senate Bill 266S, there are many concerns, and it's rushing to a solution rather than taking time to consider possible consequences. The allotment carryover restrictions of Senate Bill 266S greatly concern me, as this reduces my daughter's and my students' abilities to save a portion of funds from year to year in order to afford specialized curricula. Much of the curricula that is specialized for students with special needs is very expensive, but it can be used for multiple years for each student. Saving funds from year to year is the only way that many families can afford the specialized curricula. So I ask you to please continue to push forward with House Bill 400, as that is the one that gives the Department of Education the time and responsibility to fix any constitutional concerns. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Jones. I don't see any questions from the committee. So, Mr. Matthew Forrester, are you there? Okay, we'll check in from time to time. Ms. Carol Simpson, calling in from Homer. Can you state your name, your affiliation, and proceed with your two-minute testimony?
Hi, this is Carol Simpson. I am testifying on my own behalf. I have 7 adult children that I homeschooled for 31 years, and some of those currently homeschool my grandchildren in correspondence programs. I homeschooled for the first 11 years independently and then through a statewide program for the remaining 20 years. Over the years, I've appreciated the support of our legislators for homeschooling in general and correspondence programs in particular. I'm thankful for the efforts of both the Senate and the House to ensure that this model of education continues intact after Judge Zeman's broad ruling. HB 200 version R appropriately focuses efforts on the issues that the judge objected to. It also includes a sunset clause, which provides for more time to thoughtfully assess the needs and develop statutes and regulations that are in better alignment with the state constitution while protecting the continuation of correspondence programs. SB 266, on the other hand, would quickly put into place several additional provisions beyond the immediate need, likely resulting in a reexamination and repeated legislative process if the potential decision from the Alaska Supreme Court is different than the Superior Court decision or unintended implications come to light after hasty adoption. HB 400 provides relatively broad guidance to the State Board of Education in early development and then relies on the board to create specific guidelines for implementation of the legislature's intent. relying on deed to carefully determine what regulations are needed while the legislature is not in session, provides for a more thoughtful process and inclusion of more stakeholders. So I'm in favor of HB 400 version R and opposed to SB 266 version F. Again, thank you for serving our state, for your efforts to preserve correspondence programs, and for your willingness to solicit public comment.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ms. Simpson. I don't see any questions. Representative Ortiz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I'm sorry, I forget the caller's name.
Carol Simpson.
Ms. Simpson, your preference over for House Bill 400 over Senate Bill 266, is that in Senate Bill 266, you're saying that it's too prescriptive for the reforms that would need to be made, versus House Bill is more open-ended for the Department of Education to work out? Is that basically it?
Ms. Simpson?
Yeah, the Senate bill includes additional provisions that are beyond what the judge addressed. And so what I like in particular about HB 400 is that it's specific to the judge's concerns. And then because it includes the sunset clause, then the direction is toward the board to come up with regulations, which is typically how those sorts of things have been handled. Originally, SB 366 included a lot of old regulations and was putting them into statute. A lot of that has been dropped now, but it still includes some additional provisions.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So next up, we have Amanda Rath, I believe, calling from Wasilla. If you can state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your testimony.
And I am calling. Hi, my name is Amanda Rath, and I am calling from Wasilla. I represent myself and my family. And I think maybe my testimony could help clarify a little bit about what the last representative was asking about the preference over SB 266. But I just want to give you a little thing to think about here. What if I told you about a group of Alaskan adults who have given up lucrative careers and have dedicated their lives as volunteers to a cause that serves the future of our state? These people don't earn a dime for the work they do. In fact, they spend thousands of their own dollars to ensure the success of this volunteer effort. But the cause they have embraced is taking personal ownership of the educational success of a small group of Alaskan students. They're doing this as volunteer teachers, coaches, guidance counselors, and resource coordinators. These adults study the gifts and aptitudes of each student from birth to customize a learning strategy that cultivates those students' highest potential. And it is working. This system has been in place for decades and consistently produces highly qualified professionals and well-rounded citizens. These people take their place in Alaska's communities and economies as assets. In a time of, I know you've heard this all year, chronic teacher shortages, overcrowded classrooms, tight budgets, these people see the need that our children have, and they make the sacrifices. And you hear a number 23,000 or something, but there are nearly 30,000 Alaskan students, both as independent home educators and as home educating partners of our public school districts. They save Alaska taxpayers and districts hundreds of millions of dollars each year in education funding and teacher salaries. They provide a level of dedication, outcome focus, and personal investment that is difficult to find in other educational systems. They are uniquely able to support children from birth through post-secondary education, career transition, to ensure productive future generations of Alaskans. Those who see the benefit of partnering with public school districts have traditionally had their effort, volunteer effort, honored and valued by our state. Even though all of us know the cost to these individuals are tremendous, the state has offered often to provide each student a small percentage of the funding that any other neighborhood student receives to fund the cost of these educations, a small percentage. As you know, these students qualify for only 90% of BSA, which goes to their district. And each teacher is only allowed less than half of that money to fund this world-class education, often less than $3,000 a year, as opposed to the $22,000 per year that a neighborhood school student is allotted. I challenge you to imagine people more willing and more able to stretch those dollars, to plan for the most effective and efficient use of each penny to meet the most important needs of these students. These dollars are not spent frivolously. They are planned out years ahead.
Ms. Ratham, sorry, if you could please wrap up.
Yes. So the allotment carryover allows them to be wise with their with this small percentage of the funds they get. The high school years, the advanced career and technical education, the dual enrollment, they need that. All of these things, you're going to be faced with these questions, whether in this bill or in amendments or other options, you're going to need to know these things. And I really do want you to think about this from a finance perspective, from a wise use of education funding. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, Mr. Matthew Forrester, are you there? Okay, we'll go over to Lori Zulliger, calling in from Wasilla. Ms. Zulliger, if you could please put yourself on the record, state your name, your affiliation, and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the House Finance Committee, for receiving my testimony today regarding HB 400 version R. For the record, my name is Lori Zulliger. I'm representing myself as a homeschooling parent, and I have had the absolute pleasure of homeschooling my daughter from her elementary years through high school in the state of Alaska. It is through the state's support by recognizing parent choice and providing allotment that we were able to make this educational option available for our daughter. Our correspondence school idea in the state allowed us to tailor her education toward her interests and abilities, which gave her the ability to exceed beyond our wildest expectations by earning the honor of National Merit Scholar and completing over a year's worth of college credits before graduating high school. She then went on to complete her undergraduate degree at UAA before obtaining both master's and doctorate degrees, maintaining a 4.0 GPA during her entire educational journey. Now, she has come back to Alaska and is contributing to our state's early childhood programs as an administrator. It is the fact that Alaska's legislature allows for this kind of excellence in education that makes our state's educational system so great. With that said, and for the record, I am personally in favor of the House Bill 400 version R, which puts stipulating the regulations that govern correspondence programs and allotments for education back into the hands of the Alaska State Board of Education. This revised bill deals with the constitutional issues of the initial ruling without bringing unrelated aspects of correspondence schools and homeschooling into question. As we move forward with legislation, please consider the parents and how they may best teach their students, the students and how they may best be served to the Alaskan educational opportunities, and also all the hundreds of small business vendors who supply services and instruction to our homeschooling communities in the state of Alaska. The scope of this issue is greater than it may seem at first glance. Thank you for addressing just the issues at hand regarding private school funding, and tread lightly when regulating the other aspects of options for families who are homeschooling their children, which is what HB 400 version R has done. In closing, it is important to remember our educational system is in place to give each student the least restrictive environment in which to learn and thrive. Can we argue that an individualized educational plan is an optimal solution for each child? If parents are willing to give up their time and additional income, then they should have the support of our state to honor their educational choices in the pursuit of excellence for their children's education. Thank you for considering the grander aspects of this issue.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Zulliger. I don't see any questions of the committee, so we're going to go to the next testifier, and that's Mr. Scott Gingrich calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yes, hi, my name is Scott Gingrich. I'm a homeschool parent. family of five kids. We've been homeschooling since 1998. Kids that have been advanced to kids that have been struggling. Just a really quick thing with homeschooling. Homeschooling takes us to the max. Parent involvement is a critical factor for student success. It has positive effects on academic performance, attitude, behavior, self-esteem, and motivation. It also helps strengthen the bonds between parents and schools. The parental involvement can fostered by educators and families who value each other as partners in education. And I see that with the homeschool program that we work with, and that's IDEA. And I'm in favor of House Bill 400 version R. And I'd like to go through some of those points. The first one on allowing parents to continue to opt out. A quick definition of standardized test is that it's a test that's administrated and scored in a consistent and standard manner. It requires all tests to be answered in the same with the same questions or section of questions with a common bank of questions in the same way. In the last under 20 years, we've had the SBA test, high school qualifying exam, Terra Nova CAT test, Alaska Science Administration, PEAKS and STAR, and now Alaska READS. So we've gone through or added many, many tests. As far as in part one, the consistency is also not there. We've gone from paper to computer to multiple choice questions, essay, short response, adaptive tests. And as far as also the scoring should be interpretive to response that are considered consistent and predetermined. If you look at last year's results from the STAR test, we didn't, as parents, didn't get scores back for a whole year. So it doesn't seem, there's no consistency there, and it makes it hard for parents to believe that there's value in that test. To move on to the next point, the allotment carryover change. Again, it shouldn't change, and that's what we like about the House Bill 400. But if you look at Senate Bill 266, the first version said that the allotment carryover was needed to be closed. That's the word they used, because it was unconstitutional. That's why they addressed it. But in version S of that same Senate Bill 266, the allotment carryover would be limited to 10% of the spent funds or unspent funds. So is it unconstitutional or not? I believe that it is constitutional, and that's why they made the change. So I believe that's why there shouldn't be any new change to the allotment carryover. As far as the ILP, the ILP is just good teaching. Every single school in Alaska has a plan for their students. An ILP is even better because it customizes the plan to each of the students. And when it comes to, again, I want to thank you again for all the work you guys do and taking the time to listen, because knowledge is power. And given the fact that you allow this to go on for a year, it gives you time to not be rushed, and it gives you time to get more feedback and do more research so that you can make the best decision with increased knowledge with the issues at hand. Again, I thank you for your time and listening to my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Gingrich. We do have a question from Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. Mr. Gingrich, thank you so much for calling in. Really appreciate your vast scope of experience of having five children at home. I have four kids, and I went through IDEA. I think we may have started near the same time. It sounds like you said 1998. So back then, things were very different. And I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit, because you've now been through the change. There's been changes in the last 10 years or so. So if it's okay with the co-chair, if you don't mind, I would like to hear a bit on his experience with that. Mr. Gingrich, I too have been frustrated with the myriad of tests that have gone on. Currently, are your five kids taking the, what I guess now, what do we have, the Reads Act maps and other things that they have as opportunities through Anchorage and IDEA? Are you currently doing participating in those?
Well, with the rest of graduate, I only have one left at home, and he's now in the later part of high school, and so he's beyond those testing ranges for the current tests.
Okay, thank you. And then with the you talked about the allotment carryover. That's something that is relatively new. So I wanted to hear if you could share a little bit about that. Back in the day, my experience was we had an allotment for curriculum, all of it, of course, aligned with the ILP. So we had to make sure that it was, you know, in accordance with what our licensed teacher advised us together. We chose what was appropriate for our child or children. And then the curriculum, which it included things like books, and sometimes it was some manipulatives, hands-on things, et cetera. At that time, even the things that we had went back into the school, kind of like the neighborhood schools when they share books the following year, et cetera. So did you live through that experience as well at that time? Okay, and now my understanding is that has changed. Can you describe the differences?
The difference is it allows you, instead of having this feeling of being rushed to use your allotment dollars, again, if you have a budget, you can actually, and you have time to think about it, you can make better decisions with how that money is spent. And this gives families time to save money. I love the fact that there's the ability to save money when you don't need it, to not spend it for things because the curriculum is getting more expensive. The opportunities to take college classes in person when the student is ready, there's so much success that is seen there because not only is it an opportunity to do it gradually than being thrown into a full-time situation. They're getting the support at home. They get support financially through their homeschool program, and they're doing it gradually. And it builds so much confidence in them. My oldest two ended up having 30 college credits before they graduated high school. So they had their freshman year paid for. And not there's usually most freshmen fail courses. That was not the case for my kids when they went off to school because they had that confidence. They knew what they're doing. They went through the Blackboard system, and it helped them prepare to be a much more successful adult. And they both have gone on to get their master's program, master's finished.
Thank you, Mr. Gingrich. I'm very supportive of all students in Alaska to be able to have concurrent classes. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for our high schoolers if we could all afford it. It sounds like what you have done or been able to do is save your money and use it accordingly at a later time. And that's not something we used to be able to do. Every time at the end of the year, that money went back into the system. And so that's just a little something new to me, but I can understand now why it's advantageous to you, may not be as advantageous to neighborhood programs who cannot do that. The other question I had was around supplies themselves or books, et cetera. When you use a book one year, when you're finished with that book, does it go back into IDEA?
We're allowed to save the book with five kids, to use it for the other kids. And then when we are done with the book, we return it back to IDEA so it can be reused by other families.
Okay, thank you. So you can save it within your family as long as you want to, and then it goes back into the system?
But if we were to withdraw, we would have to return it within 2 weeks of withdrawing.
And is that the same for other things, like let's say you needed a computer?
Yeah, so they give you the option to purchase it at a depreciated rate depending on how old it is. Or you just return it.
Okay, thank you. Co-Chair Foster, I appreciate hearing a little bit about the differences and the nuances of what's happening now for homeschool parents as they work through the allotments. And I think there's a lot of changes that's happened, and I think it's important that we understand those. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gingrich.
Thank you, Mr. Gingrich, for calling in. We do have Mr. Matthew Forrester back. Mr. Forrester, if you could state your name and your affiliation and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
My name is Matthew Forrester, and I'm calling in representing myself and my family. We are an IDEA homeschooling family.
Okay, please proceed.
Sure. I just wanted to call in and say that I am happy to see the changes in House Bill 400 that we have now under version R. And I support those changes. I kind of wish we weren't in this position at all, because I think the system that we currently have in place worked very well. But I do support House Bill 400 version R, and I think that I'm glad that it moves the responsibility to the State Board of Education to address the congressional questions. I'm also glad that it has a sudden set provision, because this is not something that should be rushed. You know, and Alaskans deserve the time to evaluate these issues and to try and avoid unintended consequences. And I think that this gives us that chance. And by contrast, I think Senate Bill 266 has not addressed these issues in an acceptable way, because it still contains issues not related to the constitutional questions. It doesn't have a sunset provision, and it still has some unintended consequences for homeschoolers. We have three children, all three of whom I've been homeschooled through the IDEA program. My oldest daughter runs her own business. My middle daughter is, halfway through working on her bachelor's degree in natural resources management at the EOAF. Our youngest daughter is still in high school. And I think it's been a great program for our family and for many other families that we know. But I do want to say I also appreciate the legislature trying to take quick action on this issue as well, even though it's not something that should be rushed. I'm glad to see it's being taken seriously, and I appreciate that. I think that's mostly what I had to say.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Forrester. And just so folks know where they are in the lineup here, we've got Sherry Taylor, then Eric Palin, Adele Pribino, Dave Colender, and Penny Vadla. So with that, we'll go next to Ms. Sherry Taylor, calling you from Soldotna. If you can state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yes, thank you. My name is Sherry Taylor. I am representing myself. I am a homeschool mom in Soldotna, and I've been homeschooling my son through a correspondence program for 6 years. I wholeheartedly support HB 400 version R. The bill no longer includes issues that are unrelated to the constitutional question. It requires that the State Board of Education address the constitutional question in particular. By repealing itself and related regulation in July of 2025, the temporary nature of the bill acknowledges that Alaskans need more time to weigh these issues carefully and avoid unintended consequences. HB 400 ensures that we will have that chance. In contrast, I strongly oppose SB 266 version S. It still contains issues that are unrelated to the constitutional question. SB 266 does not repeal itself and is not temporary. The language of the bill will carry intended and unintended consequences for homeschoolers and for all schools. Homeschooling families and stakeholders in all schools across the state need more time than we currently have left in session
to fully have productive discussions about these important issues. In the meantime, we desperately need homeschooling to continue in the model that it is, with the least disruption for students and families. As a current homeschool family using a correspondence program, HB 400 version R supports what we need. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for calling in. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair, to the co-chair. Again, ma'am, I'm sorry I missed your name, but could you, several callers have talked about how Senate Bill 266 has measures in it that are not related to the court's ruling on their view that it was unconstitutional and the way it was moving forward. Can you give me some examples? Because several people spoke about them, but what kinds of measures are in there that are not related to the judge's ruling?
So I believe that the judge's ruling was really applying to the part of the Constitution that states that public funds should not be used for private education. And the Senate Bill 266 addresses standardized testing for all families and addresses no allotment carryover, and those don't are not really what's at play.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Taylor. Next, we have Eric Palin calling you from Big Lake. If you can state your name, your affiliation.
Yes, this is Eric Palin calling in from Big Lake. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm calling as a homeschooling father of four girls, all enrolled with IDEA Correspondence School. I'm also a retired naval officer with 28 years of service. To know that freedom is very important to me. IDEA Correspondence School has offered incredible freedom to my family, and the allotment funds that allowed for music and karate lessons for my girls, along with curriculum materials as well. They're all excelling at school. My oldest is even a published author. Homeschooling works and delivers results for a fraction of the cost of bricks and mortar schools. It's a great deal for both the state and the students. It's a true win-win situation. Our experienced and professional IDEA contact teacher has always been very careful to follow the rules regarding proper reimbursement for these educational expenses. HB 400 version R supports my freedom and vision for my children's academic success without the overwhelming controls placed upon it by the counter bill currently in the Senate, namely SB 266, which I strongly oppose as it's inequitable and onerous in many ways, which add no value. I support HB 400 version R as it has a set time limit of 1 year only, in order to allow for judicial and legislative corrections when time is available, given the near end of this legislative session. Further, I support that there are no mandatory test requirements for the students and that the allotment is fully maintained without onerous spending limits and restrictions towards the fine arts and PE, amongst other important areas in a child's development, as are in place with SB 266. And that the rollover function is preserved in full. The allotment limits in SB 266 are wholly inadequate and seemingly designed to cause damage and inequity between public correspondence school students and bricks and mortar public school students. My children would only be able to have about 2 months per year of PE and piano under current rates if I was forced to comply with the restrictive SB 266 regulations. I find this totally unacceptable. I doubt public school students and families in bricks and mortar schools would be happy with only 2 months per year of music or PE, all things being equal. I'm sure you agree with me on this. In conclusion, I urge you to support HB 400 version R. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for calling in. Mr. Palin, we've got a question from Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, Mr. Karen, I think I heard that name right.
Mr. Eric Palin.
Eric Palin.
Sorry about that, Eric. So Mr. Palin, my question is just to ask you, well, first of all, thank you very much for your service, and thank you for taking on the great role of homeschooling. And I've been hearing, as we heard from Representative Ortiz, quite a lot around SB 266, which I have not even seen. But I am hearing that part of the questioning seems to be that we shouldn't have to have any testing associated with the allotments. And yet, what I hear a lot about the big spend in education is that we don't have enough accountability for that. So I wondered if you had another sense of, or how you would answer to folks who were concerned about that. That's my first question.
Well, thank you for the question. I appreciate that. I actually had a very interesting dialogue with Senator Tobin last week, back and forth by email. And it was around this question specifically. Mm-hmm. And as I answered, I said, the key thing that I think many are opposed to, including myself, is the mandatory requirements as set out, that if you don't do a test, you aren't going to get an allotment. If you don't do a test, you can't do this. We don't want that. I'm happy to do a test, but if I don't want to, I don't want to be forced into it or have restrictions placed upon me. There are other ways to find if a child is doing well. And let's look at it. So you have an ILP, right? The ILP is well-defined. You have a contact teacher who is a professional, and you have monthly feedback with them. That's per the rules, per the policy, and we follow that, oftentimes even more than once a month, to be honest. And then you have quarterly work examples that you submit to show the progress, and if there's any areas that they're not progressing in, you can accelerate and get additional support, and that contact teacher will assist you with that. In the end, you have a professional teacher that is looking over the work that you're getting feedback to and from, and yourself who is with your child every day, day in and day out, and seeing how they're doing. In all actuality, I am the teacher, and I can track exactly where they are against where they should be. If I have a problem, I reach out to my professional contact teacher, and they assist me. I don't feel that I need additional state testing to support knowing where I am with the child, if that makes sense.
Well, Mr. Palin, thank you.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair. I very much appreciate your perspective. I felt the same way, and for one particular student, I opted out because I thought it would not be helpful to have that particular type of test, and I had, you know, the IOP was going well, working well with the teacher, so I appreciate that I had that option of opting out. I do, on the policy level, you know, I'm faced with this dilemma of thinking about how to answer to the many Alaskans who are seeing public dollars spent on the behalf of your children and all of our children, and trying to come up with some sense of accountability. So there may be other ways to check off that box, but I appreciate hearing your thoughts about how that feels for you, and I do know there's an opt-out opportunity, so, you know, that's also important. But I wanted to hear your thoughts on that. And the other question I had was around your comments around the allotment carryover. This is relatively new to our state. We haven't had that before. So in homeschooling, it's a new thing that you've been doing for the last 10 years, whereas in homeschooling prior to that, that didn't happen. While the neighborhood schools are not afforded that opportunity, we're seeing that through correspondence schools. So I just wondered if you had comments about that in particular, given your experience. And before I get to that through the chair, I do know that this Senate bill does have this other opportunity, from what I hear, for those who don't want to test to have the portfolio option of checking that box. When I said other options of checking that box, that was what I was referring to. So you wouldn't have to take a test. Instead, you could share examples of what you've done. So I just want to make sure that that's something that you're aware of as you're thinking through this, Mr. Palin. But if you could give me your comments on the piece about the carryover, because it's a stumbling block for me, and I'd like to hear more from you on that.
Well, thank you for your questions. I appreciate that. So I would answer this looking at it. Let's look at it from 30,000 feet, first of all. As has been explained much more eloquently by previous callers giving testimony, we know that from the statistics available that a child in public school, bricks and mortar public school, the cost is about 3 to 1. It depends on the district and there are other manifestations, but fundamentally, the cost to put a child in brick and mortar public school, even without having rollover and these sort of things, is far more expensive. And those items are available if a child uses it or not. Now we know how they are functioning through the exams, as you mentioned in the previous question. So, or not functioning, as the case may be. So that's fair enough. When it comes to the rollover, right? First of all, we're dealing with a much smaller sum. For example, with IDEA in ours, we have $2,700 per child per year. I can tell you that there's not a whole lot of rollover out of that, given, as we know, a cost of living crisis across the country, and that unfortunately Alaska has not been spared that. That is oftentimes consumed. If you are very diligent, and if fortune allows, there may be some rollover. I don't see it that people are rolling over a huge chunk of that and suddenly having capability to do quite a lot. I know some are very diligent and they do take advantage of that, maybe for their high schoolers. I heard a previous caller and well done on him, and I'm hoping I can do that with my daughters as well. But as I mentioned in my testimony, just the simple fact of, you know, music lessons, PE opportunities, et cetera, will consume quite a large, and then curriculum. Curriculum is always getting more expensive. There is very little in terms of rollover. It's not like people are rolling over $5,000 a year, and at the end they have tremendous sums. It's not like that. And so I don't want people to have the vision that we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars that they're squirreling away somewhere. We're not talking about 401ks here, yeah? And so that's I think really what cuts down to it. And I don't know if I've answered your question specifically, but you mentioned you hadn't looked at SB 266. And the reason I had hit on specifically say music or PE, for example, was because those items were specified out in fine arts as well, I believe, as one of the provisions that only 15% of the allotment could be spent per year per child. So let's do the math on that. If you have $2,700 and you're allowed to spend 15% of that, we're not talking a huge sum. I think all of us realize that. We all know how much things cost. Now let's just look at music, for example. Let's say your child wants to go to, I don't know, piano lessons. Between $50 and $60 an hour. Kind of a standard price, plus or minus. Well, doesn't take long to see that they're not going to have much music that year. Whereas a public school student, if they want to go and join music class, they're going to have it for the whole year. Sure, they don't have a rollover.
Sure, sir?
They don't have to handle the receipts and submit. But I'm just trying to be clear with you about SB 266 and some of those restrictive provisions. And whereas we really support, I support HB 400 version R. And so I'm very thankful that you didn't put in such restrictions.
Thank you. Through the chair, if I may.
Thank
you. I think I have a pretty good sense of where you're coming from, and I very much appreciate your sharing your perspective. And I, as we're trying to juggle through, Mr. Co-Chair, we have also been hearing, although in this body, in this particular committee, we haven't heard very much from public testimony from the neighborhood schools, because at the time we were going through the operating budget, we did not, we asked specifically for folks not to talk about public education funds because we were not going over the HB 140 at the time. So I just want to be clear about that. But when I did hear from hundreds, if not maybe even thousands of parents, Mr. Palin,
Chair,
particularly.
Chair, excuse me. We have a testifier from the public on the line. Can we respect his time, ask the question so he other people can testify, please?
Representative Galvin.
You bet. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I just wanted to, my last sentence, if I could finish the sentence, was just that we've had some schools either be shut down or not have any music at all. So I'm trying to think through policy for individual families who certainly deserve to be able to teach their children at home and make decisions, and then so many others who are dealing with other issues that are just quite difficult. So I really thank you, Mr. Palin, for taking your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Adam.
We're going to go to the next question, and then we're going to take a 10-minute break. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair to Mr. Palin, this is Representative Stapp. So I just think I'll be really quick with you if you can just kind of simplify kind of my thoughts here. So my issue with the Senate version of the bill is two things. So first, the testing portion of their version as opposed to our version, HB 400, only is applicable to correspondence school kids. So it's not applied uniformly to all the kids in school. So right now, everyone can opt out of testing. Their version of the bill basically says everyone can opt out of testing unless you're a homeschool kid. And I think that creates an equity issue. The second issue I have with the rollover provision is very simply, when we allocate funds from this body to school districts, if they don't spend all the money, right, the state doesn't reach in to their fund balance and take it back in a single fiscal year. So I'm not sure why we would want to be prescriptive in that when we're not in terms of an allotment. So those are kind of my thoughts, and if you could just give us a quick comment on that, that's all I have. Through the chair.
Mr. Palin? Mr. Palin, are you still there?
Maybe. Yes, I'm here, and thank you for that comment. I wholeheartedly agree with you that SB 266 is putting in restrictions that are inequitable. I agree with what you just mentioned in full. I have no other comment.
Thank you.
Okay, House Finance will be recessed for 10 minutes till 4:55. Okay, House Finance, back on record. The time is 5:00. So as I mentioned earlier, just wanted to mention the lineup that we have. The next five testifiers we have are Adele Privino, Dan Kalender, Penny Avadla, Kelvin Odegaard, and Stephanie Forster. Those are five, then we've got 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. We've got 19 folks who would like to testify still. I'm supposed to be in a meeting at 5:30, and then half of us need to be at a meeting at 6:00. I'd like to make sure that we're giving folks an opportunity to testify, so if we could just keep that in mind. So with that, next up we have Adele Privino. Ms. Privino, if you could put yourself on the record, looks like you're calling in from Soldotna. If you could state your name and your affiliation and proceed with your two-minute testimony. Some folks out there, affiliation might just be parents of a homeschooled child, and that's fine. So Don't need a fancy title or anything is what I'm saying. So with that, Mr. Pribno, Ms. Pribno.
Okay, my name is Adele Pribno, and I will keep this pretty short. I am a homeschooling parent, grandparent, and certified teacher that now works with a homeschool program. I've been involved with homeschooling in Alaska since 1984. I am also a lifelong Alaskan and believe the House Bill 400, Version R, best addresses the needs of the Alaskan homeschoolers by following the law while not putting a sudden kink in their homeschooling journey. By repealing itself in July 2025, the temporary nature of House Bill 400 acknowledges that Alaskans need more time to weigh issues carefully to avoid unintended consequences. Senate Bill 266 does not repeal itself and is not temporary and still contains issues that are unrelated to the constitutional question. This is just one of the main reasons that I support House Bill 400 Version R. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Dan Cullender calling in from Eagle River. If you can state your name and your affiliation. Mr. Cullender, are you there? Okay, we'll come back to you here. If we could go to Penny Vadla calling in from Soldotna.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Penny Vadla, and I am a high school teacher and a college teacher in this state since 1977. I retired in 2006. And right now, I've been on the school board for 16 years. This is my sixth term. Enough about me. I would like to thank the legislators and thank you for supporting our state, for supporting our students, both brick and mortar and homeschool. I thank you for your due diligence. Real quickly, I went through your House Bill 400 Version R, the guidelines. I want to ensure that those guidelines are monitored. Adopt regulations and standards for ILP, yes, with formative and summative assessments, because that formative assessment will add details that will help the summative assessment. And I think those need to be consistent and there needs to be oversight. I would like there to be an annual allotment where the oversight is there. The Department of Education will monitor the student allotments. I hope that we ensure that funds are not used for private schools or for religious purposes. I believe in the separation of church and state. I do support Senate Bill 266. I have to review it again. I haven't had time. I've been grading things for the state and for other local areas. I will look at more information and have more feedback. As far as testing goes, if I'm correct, and I might not be, I think homeschooling, they don't take up many of those tests. I think that what's been taken is only 14%. I think the brick and mortar is higher. I have never been a tester. I like portfolios and other manners of testing. And so that worked for me as an English instructor. Yes, testing takes a variety of measures to be successful. Initially, and I already said this, testing should be formative in nature and show progress or lack thereof, while summative testing is overall and is a final summative measure. Lessons, as far as band goes, band participation is really important. I'm referring to something that somebody made a comment. Lessons are very different from being a member of a band. We paid for private lessons for our daughter with the oboe and our son with the saxophone and the guitar. And so I think those private lessons made a difference. I do not want to pit one type of schooling with another type of schooling. I think both are essential and both necessary.
Ms. Vadla, if you could please wrap up.
I think the monitoring in both is essential, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we're going to go over to Kelvin Odegaard calling in from Fairbanks. If you can state your name, your affiliation, and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
My name is Kelvin Odegaard. I'm calling in on behalf of myself. I'm a homeschooling parent. I was also a homeschooling student in this state under similar system. Just calling in to say that I think House Bill 400 seems to be addressing the judicial issue that was brought up and its concerns with the constitutionality of public education funds going to private schools or religious schools. I do like the fact that it primarily relies on the Department of Education to get into the nitty-gritty details, given the short timeline, and that it self-cancels, as it were, so that if there is an issue, it can be readdressed given more time. I know there's been several questions regarding the allotment and whatnot, so I'd just like to provide a little bit of my perspective on it. And that is the homeschooling program I currently work through with my students, with my kids, whichever you want to call them, has rigorous standards for making sure that, you know, they made it clear to me when I was using the allotment how things are paid for. And then when we're done with them, making sure they get returned. And I have heard, in talking to some other people, concerns about how the programs are run and whatnot, but I appreciate that the House bill doesn't get into those arguments and focuses on what was brought up with the funding instead of what the Senate bill seems to be doing, which is trying to take on every issue anyone ever brought up with the schooling. I do know there is a lot of issues with our schooling systems, both brick and mortar and homeschool, but I don't think this is the right forum to be addressing everything.
Okay, Mr. Odegaard, is that the completion of your testimony?
Unless someone has questions, that's all I got.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in. I don't see any questions from the committee. So we'll next move over to Stephanie Forrester calling from Anchorage. Ms. Forrester, if you could please put yourself on the record. Okay. We'll come back to Ms. Forrester. We'll do a check-in for Dan Colander. Are you there, Mr. Colander? Okay, we'll check in with, next up we've got Ellie Osler, Don Kogan, Dean Odell, and Terry Beach. Ms. Osler, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, if you can state your name, your affiliation, and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Chair of the Finance Committee, for the opportunity to speak. My name is Ellie Osler, and I represent myself and my family. I would like to express my support for HB 400R. It is superior to SB 266 in every way. One of the biggest benefits of homeschooling is the ability to create an individualized education for children. For our family with five children, this includes music instruction with a private teacher, which we pay for with our allotment. It would be a financial strain on our family to have a percentage of the allotment for the arts reduced as it would be with SB 266. It would be detrimental to our children to lose access to the arts. Homeschooling is less costly to the state of Alaska than brick and mortar school model. Our BSA is reduced twice before it goes to our students. We are with IDEA and are allowed $2,700 per child, with which curriculum, arts, and PE are provided to each of them annually with oversight from their certified guidance teacher, Adele. We have one child with a learning disability who qualified for an IEP. Together, she and I worked within that budget, and she has achieved a higher reading level than we were told was even possible at her diagnosis. The brick-and-mortar student dollars are multiplied exponentially and cost constantly. Many homeschoolers left the public schools because they failed the special needs students abysmally. Educational failures have costs more far-reaching than just dollar signs as they impact the psychological and emotional development of children. The rollover accounts are important because some families are purposely setting aside portions of money to pay for opportunities like trade classes through AFTEC and college classes. Again, wise use of publicly allotted funds. Homeschooling is not free, and it does have a cost. In homeschooling families, one parent usually shoulders the bulk of the educational responsibility, while the other parent shoulders the bulk of the financial responsibility. The people educating the 24,000 homeschool students are doing so at no cost to the state of Alaska. How many teachers and staff would the state have to hire to replace us? None of us are privileged or special for choosing to homeschool. We put the sacrifices in for the most valuable part of our life, our children. Our children deserve a strong familial and educational foundation, which will in turn build a stronger Alaska. We would deeply appreciate the state continuing to come alongside us with financial support for our endeavors as we educate the future of Alaska in our homes. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in, Ms. Osler. Next up, we have Don Kogan calling in from Fairbanks. Don, if you could put yourself on the record.
Hello. Dear Alaska lawmakers, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share how homeschooling has benefited my family. As a fourth-generation Alaskan, I have truly enjoyed the freedom of choice I had for 18 years to teach my children at home. We lived nearly an hour north of Fairbanks during these years, and I homeschooled because transportation to and from school was impossible. During this time, we faithfully attended state testing every year. When testing became a parent choice, we discontinued our participation because the results arrived long after the window available to use this data to make informed decisions. I discovered many formative assessment strategies that better lent themselves to adjusting curriculum and instructional strategies. Parents should have the right to opt out of state testing. Allotment carryover accounts have been a powerful resource for students pursuing dual enrollment at our UA campuses, as well as those taking ground school and participating in higher level educational opportunities like Close Up in Washington, D.C., or Lego in high school robotics, for example. A large amount of ACA money is kept in state. ACA is closely managed by correspondent school programs who have policies in place to manage accountable use of these funds. My daughter used her ACA funds for attending UAF and graduated from high school with over 20 UA credits. She also obtained the UA Scholar Award as well as the top level of the Alaska Performance Scholarship. She was awarded her English degree in 2017 from the IDEA program and is now an author, illustrator, mother, and wife. My son completed his journeyman plumber's licensure at the age of 25. He is a husband, father, and productive citizen of Alaska. As a homeschool parent, I loved having an individual learning plan to guide curricular decisions and hold me accountable to the state of Alaska and my correspondence school. I absolutely respect our state constitution as written and hope lawmakers can reach a decision that honors our constitution while still providing Alaska families like mine the freedom to utilize state-funded allotments. Senate Bill 266 gives a good option for, between testing and portfolios. However, this bill clearly makes punitive changes to the feasibility of providing homeschool children an equitable and well-rounded education with a limiting allotment carryover, as well as a 15% limit on contracting with art, music, and PE vendors. Homeschool students do not have gym teachers, or music teachers. These subjects are very important in student academics, and physical and psychological development. Currently, because of Alaska's diverse choice of education options, many correspondent school students graduate from public schools and become excellent Alaskan citizens. Why would we want to destroy so many benefits of correspondent schools? School districts, families, and our state at large benefit from correspondent school education, and other states actually look to Alaska as a successful model of providing such a diverse education system.
Ms. Kogan, can you please wrap up?
Yes, on HB 400R to provide continued support to Alaska homeschool families like mine. I'm Dawn Kogan, and I appreciate how this bill has been written to support homeschool families. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Kogan, we do have a question. Representative Tomaszewski.
Not a question. Dawn, thank you. Thank you for calling in and testifying. And thank you for all the hard work and commitment you do for the kids in our community. Thank you.
Ditto.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Kogan. Next, we have Dean Odell calling in from Anchorage. If you could put yourself on the record.
Hey, Dean.
Dean Odell, are you there? Okay, I'm going to do a check-in with Dan Cullender. Are you there, Mr. Cullender? Stephanie Forrester, are you there? Okay, we'll go down to Terry Beach, calling you from Fairbanks.
Hello, my name is Terry Beach. I am a former homeschooling mom but continue to be actively involved in the homeschool community here in Fairbanks, Alaska. I am a lifelong resident of Fairbanks, and as I said, I homeschooled my two children through kindergarten all the way through graduation through Alaska Correspondence School program. They graduated in 2015 and 2018. My children excelled in school, largely, I believe, due to my ability and freedom to create a learning plan which uniquely suited each one of them. Having an adequate allotment with the freedom to choose quality curriculum that suited our needs made a tremendous difference. Quality curriculum tends to get more expensive as you go up in grade level and students advance in their knowledge in a particular area. The needs to support, I needed support in some areas that I wasn't as strong a teacher in subjects as they moved into high school, and so I needed other educators to come alongside me and help me, but you have to pay for that as well. So all of that helped me be able to continue to give superior education to my children as they move through high school. The ability to have access to that rollover allocation is very important as they move into high school. And it, keep in mind that also as people, everybody gets that rollover, but not everybody uses it. We've heard testimony about the fact that UAF, a lot of people went to UAF. My children didn't make that route. So when we graduated, they actually had a lot of money that went back to our school district because we were very economical and tried to be very wise with the use of the allocations because I don't want to waste taxpayer public money because we were blessed with that. I'm also concerned with the Senate bill that it put restrictions on PE, financial restrictions on how you can use it for PE, because to graduate through the homeschool program my kids graduated, you have to have 3 semesters of PE, and yet they limit to the funds so that we would have, high schoolers would have difficulty meeting that graduation requirement with the limited use of funds for PE, because we don't have access to the gyms and the equipment and materials that public schools do, so we have to be creative in how we get our PE in for graduation requirements. I also am concerned that putting restrictions, as many as the House bill, I mean, the Senate bill puts restrictions on, that requires another level of oversight. So we pour more money into administration and less actual funds into the education of our children. So I really do support the House Bill 400R and hope that that will continue to be pushed forward and passed so that we can continue to have excellent results of homeschooling in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beach. Next up, we have Brandy Brantz calling from Homer. If you can put yourself on the record.
Hello, my name is Brandy Brantz, and I am calling from Homer. I've been a homeschool mom of my 3 kids here in the state for 12 years. We have worked both through Connections and now through IDEA. And I am calling to support the HB 400 version R bill. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. there's been so many good points brought up. I don't want to be redundant, and so I want to bring to the table what I think is unique from my experience. I have 3 kids who are neurodivergent, so we're not talking about children who need extreme help in a school district, but they also don't learn in your typical manner. And we've dealt with dyslexia, dysgraphia, OCD, and anxiety disorders in our home. And so being able to have the freedom that comes with that allotment to be able to find places that we can find success that aren't necessarily brick and mortar style has been incredibly important for us finding success in our education progress. And I see in the HB 400 the ability to just have more time to keep progressing in a way that protects those freedoms, as well as being aware of what needs to be taken care of as far as constitutionality being respected. It feels on this end that this whole progress has kind of smacked us all in the face. It has moved incredibly quickly, and I have spent 12 years kind of leaning into this system, and it has given us support and a structure and an accountability to our homeschooling that has been just priceless. And so all of a sudden to wake up one morning and hear that this massive change has happened has been a little bit unnerving. And so I think that having this time frame that HB 400 gives us is going to end up more time for these nuanced conversations. And also I hear a lot from the brick and mortar type perspective that they have their own concerns with what happens with accountability in our homeschooling. And in order to really flesh those out in a way that doesn't stomp on homeschooling freedoms is going to be really important. And having that sunset clause also allows this to come to an end in a way that allows us to move forward after a year of discussion and trying this out.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Brandt, for your testimony. Next, we'll go over to Tracy Maxwell calling in from Juneau. Ms. Maxwell?
Hi. My name is Tracy Maxwell, and I'm a homeschool parent. I've homeschooled my daughters, who are now a junior and a senior, since kindergarten. My daughters are both neurodivergent and have struggled in different academic areas. An individualized education taught them to use their strengths and manage their differences. It prepared them to earn A's in the university classes that they took this year. Even people without my bias would describe them as capable, hardworking, and confident young women. They plan to continue their education through the University of Alaska and serve Alaskan communities in the healthcare fields. Their stories are testaments to the importance and success of homeschooling. I support House Bill 400, Version R, because it allows this vital portion of our public school system to continue educating students without disruption. It also allows time for more careful consideration of the issues over the next year before it repeals itself in July 2025. I also want to address the questions I've heard as the testimonies have continued. And the big one is the question of accountability for homeschoolers and our testing rate. And as a parent of a neurodivergent child, two of them, testing does not do what people want it to do. It does not tell you whether or not I'm being successful as a teacher or whether my kids are learning. My daughter has dyslexia. She will never do well on a test. That does not mean she's not learning. That does not mean she can't be successful. We need to change our thinking on how to hold schools accountable because this is not effective. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Maxwell. Next up, the next five that we have are Jacintha Mazzetti, Marilyn Plafont, Phelan Simpson, Shad Schopert, and Ashley Bauman. Also, two folks, I'll check back in, see if they're online now. Actually, three. Dan Cullender, are you there? Okay, I don't hear Dan. Stephanie Forster, are you there? And Dean O'Dell? Okay, we'll next go to Jacintha Mazzetti, calling from Eagle River. If you can state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hi, greetings. Thank you for hearing my testimony and considering my thoughts in favor of HB 400 version R. I apologize in advance. I have written down my thoughts because I'm more comfortable writing than I am speaking. So if it sounds like I'm reading it, I am. I just want to say, importantly, HB 400 cancels itself in July of 2025. This is one of the reasons why I really like it. It prevents rushed and potentially inadequate legislation, and any unexpected consequences will be provisional. We can live with it for a year. In addition, HB 400 requires that the State Board of Education address the constitutional question, which to my mind is more appropriately dealt with by them because their mission is an excellent education for every student every day. Also essential to the value of HB 400, it preserves many time-tested educational best practices that are now a result of time testing in our many correspondence programs.
I will add that SB 266 does not repeal itself, which is a problem as far as I'm concerned, because it's not temporary, and it seems to try to answer questions larger than the constitutional challenge at hand. Moreover, the language of SB 266 seems ignorant of the fact that the correspondence program brings educational dollars and therefore educational equity to all Alaskans, including Alaskans in Native and rural villages whose students had been underserved prior to the implementation of these programs. I am grateful for your public service and your responsive action on this matter, and I am assured by your diligence that you will continue to strive to make educational excellence available to all of Alaska's future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mazzetti. Next up, we have Marilyn Pilafonts calling from Anchorage. If you can state your name and your affiliation. Ms. Pilafonts, are you there? Okay, next up we have Phelan Simpson calling in from Eagle River.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, my name is Phelan Simpson. I'm a homeschool mother of three. I've got all sorts of children with all sorts of special needs. I've been homeschooling for about 6 years. I am calling in support of the newest version of HR 400R. My favorite points about it are that it doesn't really change anything as far as the allotment carryover, the testing, the changes in spending. And I think the best point about it is that it's going to repeal itself in July of 2005. I don't think that we need to rush to get any set in stone bills in place. I think that, you know, this needs to go in front of the Supreme Court and it needs to be handled properly. I don't think that we should rush on anything. I think Senate Bill 266S has a number of problems. The biggest one for me are the no carryover and the only 10% of funds to be spent on the art and math and music and PE. My children do all sorts of extracurriculars, especially gym. They're very active kids, and we go through probably 50% of it or more between art and PE classes. So there's just no way that that would work with our family. And as far as the no carryovers, I mean, as big as our allotments are, that little bit that's left over, if any, applied to next year. I have a high schooler, and just to give you an idea of how expensive some things are, I just bought a driving school yesterday for him. It was $1,000. A KCB class for him is $1,400. You know what I mean? Like, some of these classes are so astronomically expensive. So just that little bit of extra at the remaining of the end of the year rolled over to the next year really goes a long way. So that's a big deal. And I think the biggest problem that I have with this one is there is not a repeal date. It, you know, is basically permanent as it's written now. So I think that's most of what I want to say. Oh, and just another point, you know, most homeschool families are all one income families. We're all sacrificing careers. So, you know, most public school kids have two income workers, you know, families, and they have a lot more advantages. They have PE, they have music, they have art in school, and they also have families making more money. So I don't think it's too much to ask for our allotments to not change drastically. You know, that's not what the judge wanted when he tore down our allotment system, and I don't think that you guys should take advantage of all of these things that, you know, this bill is taking advantage of.
That's all I have to say. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Simpson, for calling in. Next up, we have Shad Schopert, and then after that, Ashley Bauman, Andrea Flynn, and Laura Garcia. Shad Schopert, if you're there, calling you from Anchorage, if you can put yourself on the record, state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yeah, hi, my name is Shad Schopert. I am calling on behalf of my family. I want to speak in support of House Bill number 400-R. I was a homeschool kid back in the 80s and 90s. And my wife and I had our three kiddos. My wife and I began to homeschool them in an Anchorage School District Correspondence School, Family Partnership Correspondence School, formerly Family Partnership Charter School. We've been homeschooling with ASD for 9 years, and I've been a homeschool charter school. I've been an academic policy committee chair and on the academic policy advisory committee for Family Partnership. And have been a correspondence school advocate, obviously, for many years. Because of my own background. The bill before you provides a path forward for correspondence school kids across the state to continue their programs and continue educating our children. Unlike Senate counterpart SB 266, HB 400 allows parents to continue to define what's best for their children's education. It doesn't attempt to restrict correspondence school families. It allows us to opt in or opt out of testing. Customized curriculum allows us to reserve some funds for higher, more expensive high school courses. It treats correspondence schools the same as brick and mortar schools with respect to reporting requirements. It allows for freedom of choice within the ILP. It doesn't micromanage how we spend our small amount of funds that we actually receive. It maintains current stipulations for certified teachers related to their qualifications and responsibilities. It provides the legislature, indeed, time to come up with sustainable statutorial language that is constitutionally appropriate. This bill engages the process of creating rules of the road for the districts and ultimately correspondence schools. I think it's important that we, my family and I, are to remember that me, my family and I, are a little micro public school. We represent the entire school. We're the administration, the finance department, the academic department, the janitor, the lunch lady or guy, depending on the day, the sports director, the curriculum committee, the librarian, the everything. I think there's several misconceptions about correspondence school programs. Our programs do not allow for purchasing curriculum and classes. They never have. Materials have to be returned. Families can't just keep those things. We already have a process of gauging effectiveness of our school, of our children. We're required to turn in work samples, contact a teacher on a prescriptive basis. We don't just get a check to buy whatever we want. We have to jump through significant hoops and reimbursement requirements to get that check maybe 2 or 3 months later. Some might challenge correspondence families because our funds, we use our funds in unique or special things that cater to our children's specific needs. But I would challenge that if money were no issue, wouldn't every brick and mortar school around the state also do the same thing? We all do things different based on the needs of our children. All of these things, all of these specific requirements are indeed code or in district policy, not statute. Statutes should be broad like HBR, HB 400R, not detailed like SB 266. Now, I'll end with this. Homeschooling is not easy. Everything we do is for our children. But this is our job. Having to continue to justify why we need what we need is exhausting, though. This is the time of year where we are planning next year. Instead, we're all trying to figure out how we can do that with the entire program up in the air. Every public testimony, every email, every phone call that you receive is taking away from us, taking us away from our families and educating our kids. I urge you to please support HB 400R. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schobert, for calling in. Next up, we've got seven more people, and then I'll come back to some of the other folks who we're on the line earlier. We'll try them again, but we have seven more on the list here, and that's Ashley Bauman calling in from Soldotna. If you can put yourself on the record. Ms. Bauman, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, sorry. My name is Ashley Bauman, and I am just representing my family. I'm in Kenai, Alaska. I have a small business in Soldotna. I homeschool three children. And, you know, this has thrown a big wrench in everything, and I am in support of the House bill. I do believe that It gives us the year to think about how we're going to word this to make it work. You know, being that I'm a homeschool mom and we have a business that I don't want to say it's like greatly affected. It's fairly affected. We have a toy store and we do sell educational stuff. You know, but I heard so much from the homeschool community. Obviously, IDEA just had their homeschool fair and we did attend two of them. Connections also had one. And, you know, it's just amazing to me to hear everybody's, you know, like just outpouring of what homeschooling means to them, what the allotment means to them, what it provides for the children of Alaska. And, you know, I think for me, it's just like I want to ensure that homeschooling is able to be continued through this next year. And I do believe that if for some reason you guys don't settle on this and you take it away, that, you know, we won't get it back. And that is a scary thought, especially I know for the families that maybe can't afford some of this stuff. And for the Senate bill, you know, only 10%. Now, I have one child who we use a lot of her allotment for educational stuff. And then I have one kid where a lot of his allotment goes to sports and PE and more of the physical activities. And it's, and one, they're different ages, but two, they're just different children. And so to completely regulate what every child does to that extent, you know, it just doesn't give you the personalized ability to do what's right for each kid. I agree with the person before me. This is a full-time job. Homeschooling is not an easy endeavor. It's actually probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, even more so than, you know, running a small business, because there's a lot of emotion that goes into it. But I just wanted to call in support of the House bill, the version R. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so very much for calling in, Ms. Bauman. Next, we'll go to Andrea Flynn calling in from Soldotna. If you can put yourself on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hi, my name is Andrea Flynn. I'm calling as a homeschooling mother in Alaska. I've homeschooled here for 3 years. I've been a homeschooling mother for 10 years. And in the other states I lived, we didn't have a correspondence program or an allotment. And that's been a huge blessing and benefit to our family to have the funds to buy the tailored curriculum that we need and allow my kids the enrichment activities through PE and art that we've been experiencing. I'm calling to ask that you support the Bill 400 and ask that we have more time to consider what the permanent future bill should entail, and that I don't feel it's right to punish all homeschooling families for the few people or whoever it was that was spending the funds on private education. We've never done that. We're with IDEA, and it's strictly regulated. Nothing's been spent on religious items, and the $400 that we would be allowed to spend on PE, art, and music just isn't enough for our family with the other bill. The children in public school have freedom to take art, music, and PE, and $400 just won't cover that for our family. The other thing that's important to us is the rollover. My daughter's getting to the age where she needs to do the her driver's exam and take the class. She's also dyslexic and needs tutoring, and she's hoping to take the Jumpstart program when she's a junior. So we've been trying to save rollover so she can take college classes at the high school level and get those credits and utilize the funds for that. So I'm asking that you support Bill 400 that gives us more time and keeps our current homeschooling freedoms in place.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Flynn, for calling in. Next, we're going to go over to Laura Garcia calling in from Soldotna. If you can put yourself on the record. Ms. Garcia, are you there? Okay, next we'll go over to, we'll come back to Ms. Garcia. We'll go over to Andrea Beauchart, calling you from Soldotna.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Andrea Beauchart, and I am a second-generation homeschooler. I graduated from IDEA and have now homeschooled several of my children, but more so my oldest from preschool through her now 10th grade year. And I am calling to testify in support of House Bill 400. It seems to best address the issue at hand rather than attempt to address the multiple issues that Senate Bill 266 tries to do. There seems to be a lot of overreach there. The things that I like best about House Bill 400 is it retains or allows for the allotment rollover. That has been of great benefit to our family. My daughter she's in 10th grade now, and she's completing this year with 12 UAA college credits. She's been too young to qualify for the local Jumpstart program through the college, and college classes are really expensive. This has allowed her to enjoy those as well as things like violin classes. And to Senate Bill 266, the amount that they would allow for that is simply not enough. Sports and these elective classes just get really expensive really fast. And I also like that this does repeal itself within a year. It gives a little bit more time so the state doesn't make rushed decisions. It doesn't try to fix what's not broken, rather than it just allows homeschooling to continue the way it has. That's all. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for calling in, Ms. Beauchart. Next, we have Alicia Jensen, Kimberly Welch, Audrey Madsen, and then we'll come back to some of the other ones that we see if they're on the line yet. So with that, next up, we have Alicia Jensen calling in from Sterling. If you can state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yeah, my name is Alicia Jensen, and I am calling from Sterling. And I will apologize if you hear my toddler in the background making a ruckus. I am calling on behalf of myself and my family. I am a homeschooling mom. I have a fifth grader currently enrolled with the IDEA correspondent school program here in Soldotna. And I'm calling today to offer my testimony in support of the current version of the House Bill version R. It's right now, with the sense of urgency, it's the most make sense solution for the upcoming school year, the upcoming fiscal year. It offers the expiration of 1 year to repeal itself. So, and it also safeguards the constitutional spending, which is the whole reason we're in this position to begin with. It allows legislators time. It allows the court time to fully deal with the repercussions of the ruling and the subsequent escalation to Supreme Court, which we all know is going to happen. In contrast, the Senate bill is a broad overreach into homeschooling, putting in place restrictions that don't have a lot to do with the court ruling to begin with, and they're more of like open season on homeschooling because we can, and it doesn't expire. So once, you know, if the Senate bill were to pass, we would be stuck with it. I hear a lot of conversation. I've heard the word equity thrown around, and I want to just express that we can't conflate the court ruling regarding the correspondence system and the allotment spending with what is going on with the public school budgets. We weren't in this position with nobody was looking at the correspondence schools the way they are now with the Senate bill before this ruling even happened. They are two separate issues. I don't think that there is much of a question on the performance of our students. I for one, have tested and not tested certain years. I've heard many other parents speak that there's just not a lot of value in it. And also, as homeschool parents, we're catering to the methodologies that work for our kids. I can sit him down for a math test
with AK Star, and it's going to use completely different language than the curriculum we're using at home. So it's just not a measure. It's not a tool to regulate that. It's just going to be more work for DEED. DEED needs to focus on fixing the brick-and-mortar school system. DEED doesn't need to be weighted down with holding homeschools, families accountable when we already have very good systems in place that do that. So I want to urge a committee to pass this through and please stick up for us. And I appreciate all that you do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jensen, for calling in. Next up, we have Kimberly Welch calling in from Wasilla. If you can put yourself on the record.
Hello, my name is Kimberly Welch. Thank you so much. I'm in Wasilla, and I am a homeschool mama of four. And I'm also a lifelong Alaskan who also has experienced personally done homeschooling, brick and mortar, and Christian school growing up here in Alaska. I do apologize in advance if I don't come across very eloquent in my speaking. I'm very blunt and to the point, and so that's how my spiel here is going to be as well. I am in favor of HB 400R. Not only does it make the most sense for the homeschoolers, but 266 is a slap in the face and appalling for any homeschool family. Out of my four kids, I have a few, just like a couple other families have said, have learning disabilities and being forced to test. The tests are only how a kid's doing. I have a child that he would do awesome on it, no big deal. Then I have another child that would freak out because of the pressures of testing. And then with the allotment of 266 and not being able and only able to use it a certain percentage on music and PE, I have been so blessed that I have a child that is musically gifted, and be able to take that away and not give them the opportunity to be able to pick instructors that can not only challenge them, but help them experience things through his guitar playing. He's been able to go to National Fine Arts. This will be his third year because of his advanced guitar playing. He's at a college level as a high schooler in that regard from the curriculum that they use at Berkeley for music. I just can't believe that it's so greedy and money hungry as how that 266 comes across. It's not to benefit of the kids, the state of Alaska, the future of Alaska. We're supposed to be building our kids up and help them, especially if they can only learn with a certain type of curriculum and help what works for them. Homeschooling, you come across with, you have to pick curriculum that works for that child so they can get that aha moment and it clicks, which is an amazing, amazing event depending on what type of kid you work with or have. I love the fact that, just as many others said, that 400R can be revised and also revisited. And I would hope for those that are on the committee and decipher between the 400 and 266, the revised R, I'm sorry, for 400, they would really look at the future of Alaskans. And do they want the future, the kids that are in homeschool now, to look back and see that they were short, given the short end of the stick? I don't think it's fair for our future, and I really hope and pray that you all look at the big picture of how it's going to influence and not be able to get the kids that – the families that choose to homeschool, be able to give them the resources, more of the resources that are available to them in an easier way and not such a hardship and struggle. Even though there's other options, it's not for everybody. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Welch, for calling in. So next we've got two more, and then we'll check back with some other folks here. But we've got next Audrey Madsen and then Hannah Merkin. Audrey Madsen, if you could put yourself on the record. Looks like you're calling in from Wasilla.
Yes. Hi, I am Audrey Madsen. I am a homeschooling parent of three kiddos, and I also have been seeking a degree in education. So I've kind of seen both sides of the picture. I wholeheartedly agree with most everybody that House Bill 400R is definitely the better situation for homeschool families. And it does give that expiration date. So
it can be, you know, give us more time with the legislative side of things to work things out. But I did also want to note that on the equity side of things, my youngest child, he has been in a public brick-and-mortar school for special education classes. And ultimately, we had to choose to let his knowledge and stuff either drop in a brick-and-mortar school or pull him and homeschool him because he wasn't going to be able to get the services he needed to fully open his brain in the way that he needed it to be, you know, with different modes of education. He's very auditory and he's very movement oriented, but in the brick and mortar, you know, you don't get a whole lot of that. And he has grown so much in just the 1 year that I've been homeschooling him that it is unimaginable. And then my other two kids, I have a very high learner and she gets bored so easily with things. And in my experience, trying to test out of certain grades as a young kid is actually kind of hard with brick and mortar. And when you're given the option to homeschool, you can adjust curriculum to that student's level. So I could have, you know, the same kid doing third or fourth grade math, but also doing fifth or sixth grade language arts. And it pushes them, but not the point where they're going to break. And it doesn't allow them to also get complacent and bored. And it really opens pathways for them in, you know, life. Because if they're bored, they're probably not going to like school all that much. And then also on the side of extracurriculars, the allotment only covers so much. And so having, like many have said, having that little bit of rollover can, you know, make a difference of a few extra courses or a few extra days of a certain course. And supplying the, you know, the kids equitably, brick and mortar and homeschool, that allows them to also get the same thing that brick and mortar kids would also do. So that is my testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in, Ms. Madsen. And so next up, we'll go to our last caller before I do the round, go back to some of the other folks that were online. So we've got Hannah Merkin. If you can put yourself on the record, looks like you're calling in from Anchorage. If you can proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hi, my name is Hannah Merkin, and I am calling in from Anchorage and calling to represent myself. I am a homeschooling mom. I only have one enrolled in the correspondence program right now, but I have two more that will be someday soon. I wanted to speak on a couple of things that were said. One of the things is about supplies. Sorry. One of the things is like curriculum items. So when you purchase curriculum through a correspondence program, things that are consumables are not given back to the program because they have been written in, they have been, you know, used up. And then non-consumables like textbooks, they do allow us to keep them if we plan to use them for another child instead of having to repurchase it, or you can you give it back to the program. And then I also want to bring up testing. I know that's not part of House Bill 400, and thankfully it's not, because my child, he did go to a brick-and-mortar public school in kindergarten, and they put him in testing, and it stressed him out so much that he is not able to really participate in standardized testing now. I actually, just to see, I finally, this year, he's a fourth grader, I had him do the MAP testing just to see how he was able to do, and he did it at home,
And so he actually got stressed out because the test was too long for him. And he just wanted to be done. He was crying. He was upset, because it just wasn't. And he did well. He scored above average on it, on the math test, the math part. But he said it was too long. And I can't imagine him even finishing it if he had to take it. If he had to take a standardized test. Sorry. In a room full of other kids, because he's easily distracted. I also, so I do appreciate that. I am in support of House Bill 400, version R. And I hope that as it allows correspondence programs to continue and more time to be given for things to work out, I'm going to go ahead and read my testimony because my child is being very verbal right now. So thank you, Chair and House Finance Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Merkin. I think your testimony was actually very impactful because I was hearing your little one say that there's support for HB 400 there. So that's how I interpreted that. So thank you very much for your testimony. So I'm going to go back to, I think we've got three, maybe four folks who were hoping to testify, called on earlier, may have stepped away from the phone. Mr. Dan Cullender, are you there? Calling in from Eagle River. And I don't believe Dan Cullender is there. So next we're going to go over to Stephanie Forrester. Stephanie, are you there? No. Dean Odell, are you online? Okay, we don't have a Dean Odell. And Marilyn Pilafont, are you there? No, Marilyn Pilafont. Last one, Laura Garcia, are you there? Okay. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, just would like to remind folks that if you're watching and you'd like to submit written testimony, you can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony on HB 400, which is Correspondence Study Programs and Allotments. And so that now takes us up to the 6 o'clock time, which was the time we, half of us, need to jet out of here. Representative Stapp.
I think Co-Chair Foster, I think we covered the fiscal note, and I think we had pretty well overwhelming testimony, so I would actually like to make a motion to move this bill from committee. So I'm going to go ahead and move HB 433-LS1571-R from the Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
I would object.
Okay, we have two objections. Representative Josephson, would you like to speak to your objection?
Well, yes, I would. There are many sources of concern, but I'll mention one of them, just one of them. Page 2, subsection D, lines 12 to 13. This would say that the board would decide what our Constitution means. The board would contact the Attorney General's office, and the Attorney General's office would say, Judge Zeman was wrong, and I'll tell you what's right. And I don't think that that's accurate. I don't think what he thinks is right is accurate, number one. And I don't think the Supreme Court's going to say what the AG believes is accurate either. So I don't think that subsection D works. And I think what works is 60 legislators writing a law that was essentially unimpeachable. That is, it didn't draw any objections I know of. And that is the pre-2014 law, and make sure that it complies with Article 7, Section 1. So those are some of my concerns. I also think that some of the testifiers, there was certainly near unanimity, if not unanimity, but I think they think that as I read this bill, it requires some testing, and they don't want testing. And I'm not sure that they understand that. And then they think that SB 266 requires testing when it has an option for a portfolio. So, I mean, I could have asked them a series of questions, but we had a lot to get through. So I also think that my staff and I, we're on the floor constantly. We're working as fast as we can to prepare amendments. And this just doesn't fit in that example of what the chair mentioned 2 days ago, a bill that none of us could even dream sort of virtually of amending because it was so unobjectionable, like Senator Klayman's multidisciplinary therapeutic team or medical team. So this isn't in that realm. And so I would like some time to consider amendments. And if that time is 24 hours from this hour, so that this bill is taken up at 6 p.m. on Saturday the 11th, or 11th, I guess it is, that would be fine.
Okay. We do have a meeting that we need to get to. We've got a couple questions. Representative Ortiz, Galvin. I think what we'll do, I really would like to try to at least get over to our HFC bill next. We do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bills on the docket. I don't think we'll get to all those tonight, but if we could at least maybe come back later, figure out what we're going to do with this bill, and then knock out the HFC bill. I know folks have been waiting here for a few days for that, so I'd love to see that move. But we'll come back to this. Hopefully it'll be just an hour meeting and we'll be back. So I am going to go ahead and recess House Finance at 6.02 p.m. and hopefully reconvene at 7 p.m. With that, House Finance is recessed. Okay, House Finance back on record. When we left off, we were on HB 400, which is Correspondent Study Programs. We left off with a motion to move the bill by Representative Stapp, and then there's an objection. So we are discussion. We last had Representative Josephson speak. Next up was Representative Ortiz and then Representative Galvin. So with that, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would respectfully request that in the light that we've had a number of people here waiting to hear other bills, and these are important bills as well, that we I would respectfully request that the author of the motion withdraw the motion for the time. We set the bill aside. We may get to it later tonight. I hope we do. But in respect to the audience and to the people who have been waiting for a long time, I think that would be it would allow temperatures to cool a little bit, things like that, and it would allow us to move forward with other business that's before the committee.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Representative Galvin. Okay, so we're Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. I think, out of respect for all the people here and the time sensitivity of the nature of where we are in the session, and knowing that any amendments that were going to be brought were probably going to be brought again on the floor, we'd have to discuss them then. I think we should just move this bill out if it's the will of the committee.
We have to meet Representative Galvin and then Cologne. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I think it was yesterday that you said that there may be some bills where the will of the committee will be to move without amendments, but if there were some, that then we would be able to allow for process. And I know at least I have one conceptual amendment, and so I would appreciate, if it's possible, the opportunity to allow for that process. This is such an important topic for so many Alaskans, and so having that process would I would be grateful for. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to remind the committee that Representative Ruffridge and his staff have been here many, many days and nights waiting for their turn to hear their bills. So I apologize for the people waiting here, but he has been waiting for a long time as well.
Okay, thank you. I think that comes back to Representative Staff.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. My intention is to move this bill out. I think the members said that they have amendments already ready to go. Is that fair? So I have no problem withdrawing the motion, moving the amendments, and then making a motion again to move the bill out. But I would rather not roll the bill or postpone just the time sensitivity.
Okay, thank you, Representative Staff. So
I'm going to go ahead and withdraw the motion, and then I guess the maker can move the amendment.
Okay, so we're going to withdraw the motion and then go to amendments. And I think we've got conceptual amendments that we'll just have printed. Is that right?
I have two. There may be
okay. Others. Okay. If other folks have amendments, if you could just let, if you've got, are those in written, is something written at all? If you can maybe just, we'll take a brief at ease and we'll let folks write them up. We'll copy the ones that Representative Josephson has right now, and then if Representative Galvin and Representative Ortiz just have conceptuals that they'd like to write up, we'll do that. But we'll start with Josephson's as soon as they're copied and passed out. So,
a quick brief and ease then?
Brief and ease, yep. Okay, House Finance back on record at 7:32 p.m. on Friday, May 10th, and we are on HB 400, which is Correspondence Study Program. So we do have an amendment, two amendments before us by Representative Josephson. Representative Josephson, would you like to move amendment number one?
Yes. It's not marked as such, but amendment number one should be marked as amendment number one, and it's subject. So we're talking about the same thing. In the middle of the page, you'll see a case entitled Matter of Alexander versus State of Alaska. If that's what you're looking at, I would ask that that be marked amendment one, and I move amendment one.
Check.
An objection for conceptual amendment number one. Representative Josephson, would you like to speak to it?
Yes. So here's my understanding, and I've confirmed this with the Alaska court system. My understanding is, although there was some objection from the administration early on the 25th of June in Anchorage, presumably, there will be oral argument on the subjects raised in Matter of Alexander versus State of Alaska. So these five justices in their robes will come in, and there will be two sets of attorneys before them. And I think I can say with some confidence, based on my experience just being an Alaskan, that the fact that the Supreme Court is taking this up on shortened time suggests they see this as of such public importance that they intend to rule swiftly. Well, I'd rather not have a special session. They're costly and they take a lot of time. So I'm asking to delete lines 12 and 13 and not allow, under this amendment, we would not ask the board to ask the Attorney General to come up with regulations consistent with Article 7, Section 1, but instead, as soon as a ruling is made, now it could take, there's a lot of ambient noise here, it could take a couple months to write the opinion. So I'm told that as soon as, say, the 28th, 29th of June, the court may say, we find that Zeman had his act together and we affirm Zeman, or we partially affirm, but we overrule as to part, etc. But it could take until Labor Day to write the opinion. But why would we want Deed to write regulations as it believes Article 7, Section 1 reads, when the Supreme Court is going to give us a fresh pronouncement, which it hasn't given since 1979 in the Sheldon Jackson decision? So at some point, I have to trust departments to write regulations. Let's let Department of Education Board enjoy their June. There's great fishing. I don't mean to be flippant, but and then when we get this decision, write it consistent with the decision.
Okay. So that is the amendment. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I am in opposition to the amendment. I actually would take the opposite position to the maker of the amendment. I think we have 22,000 homeschool families right now who are looking to the legislature as actually per the judge's ruling that we have some sort of statement. I think the best thing that we can do is to go ahead and get the process started for the State Board of Education to begin the regulatory framework. That way, in the event that there is a subsequent ruling from the Supreme Court, as the maker mentioned, that we don't actually know when it's going to take place. They've already begun the process. So I feel like if you make the regulatory framework dependent on a process, the maker said it might not be till Labor Day, right? And I just don't feel like it's fair to homeschool families in the state to wait that long. So I oppose the amendment.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I rise with a question to the maker through the chair. Representative Josephson, what I'm not sure of is, does this mean that homeschool as we know it now will stop until this is done? Or how does that work? I want to make sure that I understand that.
Representative Josephson.
Well, the only thing that I'm changing is lines 12 and 13. And I guess if this were adopted, my understanding is the stay is in effect now. So you're asking, would this lift the stay? I don't know. I've wondered this myself, just from a legal standpoint. Would the judge Can we just overcome a stay on the same topic by writing a law when there's an existing case and the courts assume jurisdiction? I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Okay. Further questions? Representative Hammond?
Thank you, Chair Foster. Representative Josephson, let me ask it in a different way, which is, as I'm reading this, I don't, but you're the lawyer, would you think that it precludes homeschooling decisions going forward before the regulations were written in your new amendment? Because I don't see it that way, because the bill spells out, here's correspondence provisions, and then says the board will write regulations. Well, the board process of writing regulations, those won't be done by June. They won't be done by August because of public notice regulations and deed having a process that scripts it out. So I don't think either of those provisions, indeed, the current provisions or yours, get us to a secure set of regulations by Labor Day. But I see the bill as giving enough governance to be able to go forward with some limited parts of it, right? Points 1, 2, 3, and 4 give some direction about how to run correspondence. It doesn't address all the elements that exist under the correspondence law now, but I think I read it to say that they can go forward. Here are the four things they need to do. The regulations, I think as the bill is drafted, having deed write regulations based on the Constitution doesn't change anything. And the court decision, if it's upheld, still throws that all out because presumably the regulations we have now were written consistent with our Constitution. They believed them to be. The court has found them not to be at the appellate. And we'll know if the Supreme Court agrees or not. So saying that you agree with the Supreme Court, write them with that. On the one hand, if the Supreme Court overturns Zeman's decision, that's really easy. They've already got him. If he throws it out. If they throw it out. But if they give more guidance and direction, I think it's narrowed what has to be done because I believe House Bill 400 lays out some general guiding principles for a correspondence program to go forward. So I'm in support of the conceptual amendment number one.
Okay. Do we have any further discussion? I might invite the sponsor up if he feel free to make any comments. Don't need to, but want to give you the opportunity. If you could both put yourselves on the record, Mr. Bud Sexton, Representative.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Finance Committee members. I would certainly understand the conceptual amendment offered by Representative Josephson. However, I think the issue that I would take with it is essentially throwing into question the ability of both the Board of Education and our own Department of Law to draft regulations consistent with our Constitution. I'm not certain that that is a fair assessment. There's a number of regulations currently that are linked back to both Statute 300 and 310. With those statutes being put into question or struck down, essentially there needs to be a statutory framework or a legal framework to tie those regulations back to. I think that this idea that there would need to be a massive regulations project to rewrite a whole bunch of new regulations seems a little bit broad. I think that the regulations that are there currently, if you have a chance to read them and I can provide those to the committee, are actually quite good and very clear, very detailed, actually. But they need to be tied back to some sort of law that allows them to exist. And so I don't think this language does that in a clear enough fashion. It ties it to something that, as Representative Stapp said, is a bit of a moving target. And so I would be opposed to conceptual amendment number one.
Any further comments before we go to wrap up? Seeing none, Representative Josephson, to wrap up.
Well, yes. Mr. Chairman, one of the problems with this bill is that it's asking DEED to write regs, which do take time to write because of the notice period, if for no other reason, to write regs on a law that is seriously being challenged right now, and where the only guidance I know of would be the Sheldon Jackson decision from 45 years ago. So that's what it has to work with. The advantage of my amendment is that it might help us avoid a special session, because without it, the board, I think with it, we know that the board has been ordered by law to write something legal consistent with the most recent decision the Supreme Court will issue, and that's Alexander versus State. Otherwise, they're going to have this regulation that is written short of a review of that decision, and I don't know if they're going to then change their regulation again so they're consistent with the new law. This leaves open the question of what the ruling will look like and what it will say. And if this is the marching orders, that the, this I'm talking about is conceptual amendment one, if these are the marching orders, then they should be lawful and we shouldn't need a special session. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is the objection maintained?
I maintain the objection. Call the question.
Okay, the objection is maintained. Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll on conceptual amendment number one to CS for House Bill 400.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
4 yea, 6 nay.
So on a vote of 4 yeas to 6 nays, conceptual amendment number one will not be adopted. That takes us to amendment number two. Conceptual number two, we've got a quick question though first, Representative Co-Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, I'm sure it's right here, but what's the effective date for this? The bill.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Johnson. Actually, there is not an effective date in this bill at this time. I think that was a subject matter that needed to be taken up with some of this discussion ongoing today.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so that takes us back to Representative Josephson.
Move amendment two.
Object.
We have an objection, Representative Josephson.
And Mr. Chair, I'd ask that Amendment 2 be identified in the record as an amendment that reads, a parent or guardian may not purchase services and materials from a private or religious organization with a student allotment. That's the entirety of the amendment. One of the things missing from the bill is that statement. This language is not terribly different from a bill that became law circa 2014 by State Senator Dunlap. There's a little difference, but essentially it's a more direct statement of the law as we best understand it. And without this sentence in this bill, we're back where we started with an illegal bill. Because there's no direction to DEED, because they missed this when they wrote regs from the 2014 bill, as Representative Hannon noted. There's no direction to DEED to monitor compliance. And now we know that we've got this other issue about this not becoming effective for 90 days. We're likely to have a decision before that. I'd have to process all of that. But I ask for your consideration of a conceptual amendment two.
Representative Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I adamantly oppose this amendment. I appreciate the maker for making it, though, because I do want to point out some fundamental differences between what the state's constitution says and what this amendment says. So the state's constitution says no funding shall be used for the direct benefit of a private or religious educational institution. Okay, this amendment says a parent or guardian may not purchase services and materials from a private and religious organization with a student allotment. So what's the material difference, right? So the way I read this conceptual amendment is you cannot use your allotment for any services purchased or materials from a private or religious organization. So, Mr. Kocher, members of the committee, what is a private organization? So currently, I think most homeschool folks, when they use their allotment funds, they buy books from private vendors. They buy services from private vendors, say gymnastics, PE credits through their individual learning plan. They buy materials from private vendors. They buy laptops from private vendors. But I do believe it's a great amendment because it speaks to the crux of the issue. And I don't think that we say that we should have school districts themselves not be able to use their BSA funding or their school funding for services from private institutions, organizations. And I don't know why we would want to put something in statute that is far more prescriptive than the state's constitution, and that's why I oppose the amendment.
For the discussion, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I would like to offer a conceptual amendment to the can I do that to this particular amendment?
You can make an amendment to an amendment.
Okay, I'd like to make an amendment to the amendment. And what the amendment would say would be a direct quotation that Representative Stapp just cited within the Alaska Constitution to take that direct quotation and put it into the bill. I'm sure Representative Stapp wouldn't be opposed to that.
I would object, Mr. Co-Chair. Yeah, I would object, not because I'm opposed to the language, but the language is already in the state's constitution. Right, so there's no reason to define it in statute. So we're at the point in the conversation that we're just adding things to the bill. So the maker of the original amendment, clearly chose this language for a specific reason. I don't think there's any reason to mirror constitutional language in state law. It already exists.
Representative Ortiz, I think that was an official amendment one to amendment two. Do you is that correct?
Yes, and if I have an opportunity to speak to it, I will. But for right now, yes, that would be the amendment to the amendment would be to substitute the current language that's before us in this particular amendment with the direct quotation cited by Representative Stapp that's in the Constitution, put it into the bill.
Okay, and so we did have a objection, and Representative Stapp spoke to it, I believe, already. Do we have any further discussion on Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 2? Any comments, Representative Ruffridge?
Certainly. Thank you, Chair Foster. I would say certainly my intent in drafting the underlying bill in page 2, lines 12 through 13, is to adopt the language of the Constitution as the basis for the drafting of regulations. I do find putting that very specifically, taking the language of the Constitution and just directly inserting it in the bill would be unnecessary. And well, I'll just speak only to the amendment to the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'm going to take a brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record. So again, we are on House Bill 400, which is the correspondence bill. We are on Amendment 2. And Amendment 2 before us is a amendment to that amendment. And we have a comment from Representative Josephson, and then...
Well, it was actually a question for the sponsor, if I
may. Okay, sure. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Representative Rufford, you were describing your purpose for section or subsection D. And my question for you is this. The way appeals work, typically, is that the burden, the greater burden, is on the respondent. Let me get this right. The petitioner, in this case, or the appellant, that'd be the state. So the state is losing this case right now. And they want to flip the result and say that Judge Zeman was wrong. But right now, Judge Zeman's right. And you said that... your point in subsection D was to have Deed issue regs consistent with the Constitution. But Deed is part and parcel of the state, which is in the losing position in the lawsuit. So why would we have Deed write something when their philosophy, now they're independent, they could say, Attorney General Taylor, we don't agree with you. You're so wrong on this. But that's highly unlikely. Why would we want D to write something when currently, and it could change, they're in the losing posture in the case?
Representative Ruffridge?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Josephson. And I want to be cautious because this bill does not ask the department to write the regulations. Typically, this would be the Board of Education, which would be a little different. Those are individuals that we appoint. They are appointed by the governor. They do work as citizens, volunteer citizens of the state, typically with some experience in education, certainly more so than I do, and probably more than many of the members of the legislature. So I think that those would be the hands and the minds that would be best suited to continue to draft regulations if regulations needed adjusted. I would encourage the members of the body, I will send them to you. It's about 13 pages of regulations that deal with correspondence programs in the state. The Board of Education has written those and adopted those for decades, and they've cleaned them up here or there, or made simple changes to it, but for the most part, they have functioned relatively unchanged for a while. One of the things that I think is important to note is that I don't think that a large regulations project is what is needed. I think it's a simple adjustment to say in regulation, you cannot use a allotment that is given to you for correspondence study to pay tuition at a private school. That actually is not in regulation currently. It is not in statute necessarily. And therein lies the problem for the court case that is before us. So we do have a need to say that individualized learning plans should exist, and they should be funded because they are a part of our public school system. Thank you.
So we have before us the amendment number one to amendment number two, and in wrap-up, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I offer this amendment in full good faith. It's in response to the comments from Representative Stapp that felt that the original amendment was too prescriptive and that it went even further than what our Constitution said. He cited the specific part of the Constitution. I also would be nervous if it was too prescriptive or more prescriptive than what the Constitution says. He cited it. He indicated it, a preference for that language. All I'm saying is, okay, let's insert the language. It provides more guidance than having it not there, and it reminds everybody that's going to be dealing with this issue. Ultimately, they need to write something that complies with the Constitution. And so I don't see what harm there is in that. I see no harm in that.
Okay, thank you. So with that, Madam Clerk, if you would please call the roll on Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 2 by Representative Ortiz.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
5 yay, 6 nay.
So on a vote of 5 yay, 6 nay, amendment number 1 to amendment number 2 has not been adopted. That takes us to amendment number 2, and that was Representative Josephson. Any further comments on amendment number 2?
Yes, very briefly. So the bill that Senator Dunleavy passed was enrolled as FCCS HB 278, Laws of Alaska 2014, and created, I guess, 1403.320, and that section does use the words private or religious organization. So Senator Dunleavy used the words private or religious organization, and I think that Representative Stapp has My reading of the decision that we have that's being appealed is that this is consistent with what the judge ordered.
Okay, so with that, the objection
maintained. Call question.
Maintained. So with that, Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll for amendment number 2 to House Bill 400.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
5 yay, 6 nay.
So on a vote of 5 yay to 6 nay, amendment number 2 has not been adopted. So now that takes us to amendment number 3, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move amendment, conceptual amendment 3 to House Bill 400.
Check.
We have an objection, Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I will not belabor this conversation. It's very simple. I've heard a lot of testimony today that talked about the importance of stability and keeping a good sense of what's going to happen in the future. And to me, there's nothing more important than having the predictable, adequate, stable funding. And I feel that increasing the BSA in the base by 600, which we already have in our budget, so this is not making an adjustment there, but it is putting it in the base. And for all of those who want to have arts, music, PE and everything else, not only offered in homeschool, which they should be, but also offered in our neighborhood schools, which I know that many districts have already cut those. And so this is just a lift all boats amendment. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster.
Hey, Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Foster. So I don't view this amendment in good faith. It's completely not germane to the subject. I'm very irritated that the member brought it. So I move it asking unanimous consent to place amendment, conceptual amendment 3 on the table.
Okay, we have a motion to table this. It's non-debatable. So again, it's a motion to table amendment number 3. And with that, Madam Clerk, if you would please call the roll to table amendment number 3.
Representative Hannon?
No.
Representative Ortiz?
No.
Representative Kronk?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Stapp?
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes.
Representative Galvin?
No.
Representative Colom?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
6 yay, 5 nay.
So on a vote of 6 yay to 5 nay, amendment number 3 has been tabled.
Mr. Co-Chair?
So Stapp.
Thank you. So with that, unless there's no further amendments, I don't think there are, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to move HB 400-33-LS1571-R from the Finance Committee.
Just for the record, I have a conceptual amendment, but I'm not going to offer it.
So no, go ahead.
Let's take a brief at ease here. Okay, House Finance back on record at 8.02 p.m., and we have a conceptual amendment from Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move a conceptual amendment. This act takes effect on July 1, 2024, and that would be at the, I guess I would say, I guess that would be like line 20 on page 2 at the end of the bill.
Okay, so to set an effective date of July 1, 2024, Representative Johnson, is that
your... That's correct, yes.
Okay.
This act takes effect July 1, 2024.
And when we make the motion, if we could just add, the words and make for alleged legal to make technical and conforming changes. So is there any objection to conceptual amendment number 4? Hearing none, conceptual amendment number 4 has been adopted. And that takes us back to Representative Stapp.
Okay, I don't see any more amendments, Co-Chair, so I'm going to make the motion to move the bill again. I move HB 400-33-LS1571 /R from the Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay, we have an objection. Representative Josephson, would you like to speak to your objection?
Yes. Prior to this session, what I knew about allotments and correspondence courses, I could share with someone in 10 seconds. I now know more. I understand their value. And they will return. Right now, they're suspended. I didn't do the suspending. I'm in the minority, so my power to fix the suspension is restricted. I would note for the record that the decision from the Superior Court issued 4 weeks ago today, and now we're 5 days from the end, and here we are. So 4 weeks passed, but here we are. I'm very concerned, as I've said, that the board, we just pretty handily rejected a senior member of the board. And my sense is the board is going to view this issue, frankly, outside the law. I'm not saying they're not good people. I'm saying that they're going to philosophically follow what the Attorney General tells them to follow. And that is not likely. Now, I could eat crow, but that is not likely what the Supreme Court is going to order in about 2 months. So we're asking them to go write these regs, and the Supreme Court's going to say, you're going in the wrong way. And I'm concerned about that. And the last thing I'd like to say is about the process. And I first want to commend the co-chair because you've been outstanding. You are unflappable. First of all, I've never seen you be tired. Your stamina is remarkable. I think I know why. But you've been fair and you continue to be fair. But naturally, when I'm given an amendment deadline of at least 24 or say 36 hours, I sort of hope that I'll get another amendment deadline because, you know, that's the culture. And today I wasn't afforded that. And I'm disappointed. So I'm going to maintain my objection.
Okay, any further discussion?
Yeah.
Representative Edgman.
So with apologies to the committee, I'm sort of coming into this a little bit late. Obviously, I understand the fundamentals of the issue. I also understand the gravity of the issue. I understand the nature of uncertainty around the issue and to Representative Josephson's point. And I guess, and again, I apologize for not being here earlier, but what is the downside of taking just a little more time to consider this issue? If in fact we're the last committee before this goes to the floor, which in the House means the Wild West, you know, is there more contemplation that should take place over what's in the bill? I understand Representative Ruffridge is a sponsor. You know this issue very well, and you have spent a lot of time on it. But there is a bit of an asterisk to this issue too, because again, the courts, the higher court in the state is poised to take action on this at some point. And I'm just wondering, what if we got it? What if we don't get it right? What if we put something in the law that that then doesn't, like Representative Josephson was talking about earlier, comport with what the higher court decides? Not that we could have any way to change, you know, that course in the next 5 days, but I just have to tell you, I feel a little rushed right now. And sometimes in this building, you work off of intuition. We don't have all the facts at hand. One could respond, you know, well, this issue is pretty cut and dried, right? This is what we need to do. But, you know, is it cut and dried? And that's what I guess I need to decide here in the next final moments before we vote to move it up. But at this point, I think I'm going to be a no vote.
And briefities.